guest. They didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission. Listen, it's beyond description. We don't want to fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion that you can't imagine. Don't hesitate. Rub the lamp, lad.
Welcome to Leaders and Managers Hub, the podcast. With us this week are Lisa and Gary. Say hello, people.
Hiya.
Hello.
Hello. Sophie, unfortunately, can't join us this week. She's got some things on. So we'll, you know, if there's any actions that come out of this podcast, we'll give them all to Sophie. And we'll talk about her without shame in her absence. The topic for this week's podcast, it's kind of impossible to get away from it. It's the elephant in the room, and it's around the relaxing of the lockdown measures that we have here in the United Kingdom and in the world more generally, as an outcome of the Prime Minister's announcement last Sunday. Now, we all come from very diverse backgrounds in terms of our sort of professional lives. And I'm very interested in the first instance, Lisa and Gary, to hear your perspectives in terms of what did Boris Johnson's announcement mean for you in the immediate term? What are your thoughts around the phase two, which is due to come in on the 1st of June, and the phase three, which is due to come in on the 4th of July? Over to you guys.
Oh, wow. I'll be honest, I was a little bit disappointed on Sunday. I think it had been built up quite a bit in the week before that this announcement was going to happen. So I was expecting probably more of an announcement on Sunday that was a bit more straightforward. And I kind of listened to it and thought, well, it doesn't really feel any different to what we've had and how things have been. And then the dates and the steps that they did talk about still didn't feel very clear. And actually, the challenges for us at the workshop have kind of remained the same. So Monday went by, and then Tuesday I read the 50-page document that was issued.
God bless you for doing that.
I kept thinking there'll be a bit more in there. Weirdly, the start of that is a letter from Boris Johnson, and that had more impact on me reading that than his speech that was put out on the Sunday. And I was kind of like, that's what public needs to hear. And then there was awful a lot more, but actually the detail wasn't much more than what was said. However, they have since published some guide documents for different industries that really do break it down a bit more for how to get people back to work. So I've since read several of those, mainly the office one and contact centre stuff. So, but even then, weirdly, it's a place like the workshop, which is shared office space and desk space, we do seem to have kept falling through a bit of a loop in all the conversations and the planning. So I've just had to kind of keep pulling bits of information from everywhere that I can find information to make it relevant for us at the workshop so that we can open up to everyone safely.
Yeah, it's just on that, Lisa. I mean, yeah. So I am a tenant in a workspace. I rent an office here, and not at the workshop, I hasten to add, just for listeners' benefit. But one of the things I was a little bit unclear about was, so I kind of understood the implications for me as the business owner renting a premises and what I need to do in my little unit. Yeah. What I wasn't quite sure was where the demarcation was between my responsibility and that of the landlord, if you like, mm-hmm. in terms of the shared spaces and stuff like that. Because a lot of the heavy contact points actually are out with my control. So I think that wasn't, and to a certain extent, in a 50-page document, they were never going to give the granular level of detail that everybody could be right. Okay, that's very clear for me. That's what I need to understand.
So the individual documents that they've published since, which actually they're not totally clear when you go onto the government website, but they're all there. Those are much more helpful and they're much more practical. And that's what people are going to need, is the practical advice of like, okay, I understand that, but how do I implement that in my business? So I actually think for our tenants at the workshop, they're quite lucky. And I suppose part of that is down to me being very conscious of wanting to help all of those that want to get back to work. Because as well as the open areas that I've got to consider, it has a knock-on effect onto those offices. So as business owners and employers themselves, they've definitely got a responsibility themselves for them and their staff and any of their customers that might end up having to visit. But for me as manager of the workshop, it is about the entrance areas, the communal areas, the open areas, and then the desk. And that's very different to manage to an office where they can come in straight into their office, stay there all day if they want, and feel quite safe compared to open desk areas where we've got to manage the space a little bit more. And people need it put down. So the other documents have gone out. I've actually got almost little like tick box checklists that you can work through. But even then, there's some areas that just kind of, they're not covered. And I think somewhere like our space, it's very mixed. So I've got business owners, but some of it is the shared space. So it's managing that. I also, my whole week really has been spent on planning how to get people back and what needs to be in place. So it's been all about ordering signage and putting advice out. Ready for the 1st of June. That is going to be a key date for us. And then we'll see. We'll see what happens.
And Gary, your situation is ever so slightly different in that you tend to work from sort of like a home office. So I suppose the immediate impact for you was slightly more nuanced. But what was your perspective and your take on the, what, first of all, sort of what was announced and then sort of the methods that they used and the way they communicated it?
Yes, a little bit like Lisa and probably many people in the country. I think people were expecting a more relaxed approach than what we've got that was announced, because there was a lot of media coverage before Sunday saying what was likely to happen. And I think my own thought is that what's probably happened is that they were actually thinking of having a slightly more relaxed approach. Then when they started seeing all of it appearing in the papers, they thought, we need to be really careful. We've perhaps we need to be a bit more cautious. So the papers tend to get wind of things. So if it was just one or two doing it, but I think the fact that so many were suggesting a much bigger easing of the lockdown suggests that maybe there was an internal, rapid change of heart over the last sort of couple of days before the announcement. How they've done it, I think, I don't think the announcement itself was particularly inspiring or clear. Obviously, there's been this other document that Lisa referred to, the 50-page document, which has got more in it. I've not read it all, but obviously you can't get all the fine detail of things. But it does seem to me that there are still businesses uncertain about what they should be doing and also how they're going to prepare for people coming back, particularly around, I think, the public transport for major cities is going to be an absolute nightmare. It's one thing to say, go back if you can, but, if the infrastructure is not there or you're putting people in a position where they're at even more risk of, in terms of their health and so on, I don't think that's particularly good. And of course, we've also got the issue around the schools where, again, there's been a lot of aggravated discussion over, what schools should be doing or shouldn't be doing. And again, I think that's an issue because we still don't understand fully what's happening with the virus and children. It's too early to sort of be saying, they don't get it or very few get it. So I think there's, and also you have to think about the staff themselves. So it's all very well saying, you've got to reopen, but at the same time, people are, you know, because of all the fear that's been spread, are rightly fearful. So I think that is a problem.
The school thing is massive, because although I've sent the message out to our tenants this week to say, this is what's going to happen. So if your offices, you're welcome to start coming back if you want to, but I'm just letting you know, this is kind of what's going to happen, but it won't all be in place until 28th of May. So just be aware until you see the signage up. But those coming back on the 1st, I've still got the battle. Like a lot of them I've spoken to, until they know what's happening with schools, that becomes their battle. So they're now thinking, brilliant, I can go back to work, but I can't because I've still got children at home. So it's delaying, it's still got a delay on everything for them. So I've got some tenants with 3 children. One is able to go back to school, which they're really keen to do. She's still got 2 children at home. Her normal support network is not available because they're not allowed to see the grandparents yet. So to get back to work still doesn't, they don't know when that's going to be for them yet. So they're still continuing to have to work at home. And touching on the mental health, I think that's where it's going to start coming in for everybody, because like it was 8 weeks ago where everything was moving really quickly to shut everything down, and that was affecting everybody. Now I think the ramping up again is kind of bringing all that back. It's still sort of unclear advice as to how to ramp up as it was shutting down. But the school thing, my son, I'm quite lucky. He's in a year group and his secondary school have done what I expected. And that is that they're looking to get year 10 and 12s back who have got exams next year. And I don't think it's going to be as it was. I think it's just to have some contact with them before the sort of summer holidays would normally kick in. So yeah, it'll be interesting, but I think it's been a massive thing this week. I've got friends who point blank refuse to send their children back. I've got others that are quite happy for them to go back, depending on what the schools say about how they're going to do it. My son's desperate to go back, so he's on the list to be going back in when they can. But I think all of that will have that knock-on effect as amongst, like you say, transport and stuff. I think the school thing is going to be huge, because there isn't also going to be the same opportunities during the summer break for children to go elsewhere for people to continue with work either. So I think they need to look at that as a key thing as to whether they relax it so families can see each other. But yeah, group play stuff and summer groups that people would normally run, I don't think they're going to be available this year. So the impact's going to be there long term.
Mm.
And that's going to really have an effect on people.
Well, it's interesting for me because obviously one of my daughters works in education.
Yeah.
And so I see her perspective from it. I mean, she's been working all the way through because they've been providing an education setting for an early years education setting for key workers' children. But I, you know, I've talked to her and she's expressed her anxiety and just a little bit of frustration around, you know, how are we just going to manage this? Like, we can't eliminate the risk entirely. And that sort of started me thinking about the whole psychology of it and, you know, how we perceive risk and how we manage risk. And as I was saying before we pressed record, you know, I've had cause to think about how easy life has become for us in the West, in the last number of generations. Like even only back to sort of pre-war times, you know, life was precarious. We didn't have the advances in medicine. A lot of our industrial practices were inherently risky. You know, life expectancy wasn't anywhere near what it is now. And even going back further than that in history, you know, we were constantly, you know, at risk of attack from enemies or from animals or whatever it might be. So life was, daily life was precarious. And it so isn't now. And we've also almost become a little bit complacent in terms of we don't have to consider and weigh up risk, that we might have to do something and we can't 100% eliminate risk from it. I mean, I come from construction, and specifically railway construction, which is inherently dangerous. And unfortunately, we're still killing far too many people at work. But managing risk, I mean, we went through the whole process of command and control. Now we've moved into sort of the next phase, which is around behaviors and decision making and that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, when I sit down and do a risk assessment for somebody, you know, the likelihood is always starts off as quite high. So it'll be a 4 or 5. And quite often the severity is a 5, which means death. And that's the pre-mitigated side of the risk assessment. And what we do is then we put in things that will reduce that likelihood. The severity still remains the same. You know, if the event happens, somebody's going to die. But what we're trying to do is reduce the likelihood. Now, that gives me a particular perspective on how I perceive risk. And I don't... I come from a generation who, you know, we didn't have half the risk, say, of my parents or my grandparents or my great-great-grandparents' generations, but we weren't without risk. I think now it's a psychological concept that effectively what you're asking people to do is to take a risk. And there's no absolute guarantees here. And I think psychologically, that's going to be one of the hardest things for people to work around is how, like, it's almost incomprehensible that the government would be asking us to do something that potentially might cause you to die. But, and for most of society, that's an anathema. But for some of society, you kind of live with that day to day. And you accept that you can mitigate to as low as reasonably practicable, a LARP. It's a commonly used term, and it really frustrates a lot of people, as low as reasonably practicable. What does that mean? It means that there's no absolutes. And at times, it's a simple matter of you've got to do the best you can. And I think as a society, we're just not used to being given that responsibility. We're used to being told, no, you know, you don't do that because it's risky. You know, and everything is so heavily regulated around us to actually do this shift change of, you know, we have to weigh up the balance of probabilities against, and if we take the education thing just as one example, you have on one hand the risk of damage to the mental health of our young children in the longer term. And we have no idea what the ramifications of that are, other than there will be ramifications. And the mental health and well-being of parents who've maybe been locked in with their children for the last 7-8 weeks. I can only imagine. Versus the risk of slowly reintroducing them to school and the risk that imports into spreading the disease again and putting teachers at risk. And we've applauded the National Health Service and social care workers and everything for the last 8 weeks on a Thursday evening because they're putting themselves in the line of fire, so to speak. Effectively, what we're asking now is we're asking our educators to do the same, albeit maybe at a slightly reduced risk, but a risk nonetheless, because there are no absolutes here. And that's a heck of a thing to ask somebody. Like, I can understand my daughter's frustration, her anxiety, her stress, and her fear, because she's never been asked to do that before. And now she is, for a greater good that her generation have never had to even consider. So I think, like, we talk about it being the need for an economic recovery. The economic recovery, whatever it will be a result of what we do. The biggest challenge I feel is around mental health and psychology and our success or failure, if you can even talk in terms of failure, because it's just different levels of success, I think, in my opinion, will be on how resilient, innovative, and how we accept or don't accept the individual risks, whether it be going into a classroom of children or getting on a train to go to work. I think it's something that probably since the war generation, we've never even had to consider. And now it's real. And I think that's going to be the single biggest challenge.
Yeah, I think with schools, they like the construction industry, that, you know, they have to carry out a lot of risk assessment, and it's highly, you know, controlled. There's a lot of rules and laws and regulations. So I think that also, you know, is part of it, that, you know, schools can't just say, oh, we'll just reopen. It's not like a business can say, oh yeah, we'll reopen and, you know, we can all be adults about it. You know, there are sort of particular challenges they will face, I think. I mean, for me personally, you know, the announcement didn't really sort of change much. I've been doing my walks and so on. But actually, even though I work from home, I'm actually now looking for a shared workspace, because that helps me.
Oh, I know somebody who can help you with that, Gary.
Yeah, I know someone too. I might be talking to them very shortly. And it's really about the just the ability to focus, because of my particular circumstances where, you know, I'm in a position where I'm having to support someone at the moment, you know, and I, for my own health and well-being, and also to be productive for my own business, you know, I need to have the right space and environment for that. So I'm actually going the other way from the advice, which is, you know, stay at home. It's like, that's actually not, you know, good for me to be 7 days a week here. But I've also been looking at, you know, sort of reviewing equipment and applications for what I probably sort of need over the next few years, and adjusting sort of offers or creating offers around some online stuff as well. So there's everybody has to adapt and, you know, see what this means for them, whether they're, you know, individual businesses or small and medium sized businesses or the corporates. I mean, even obviously I saw that they were piece in the news about Canary Wharf and what they're doing. So obviously they've got these huge tower buildings, so they have to look at how many people can get in a lift at one time. Yeah. You know, creating one-way routes and staggering the working and all that kind of thing. You know, we've got to a point, I think, with business and economy particularly, where it's all been driven by, you know, it's the 9 to 5, it's the, you know, commute into the city, pile everything into London for, you know, for many years, you know, and then we, you know, we don't think that's at some point going to create problems. So, you know, certainly this pandemic is forcing people now to reassess and review, you know, much broader things rather than just the nitty-gritty of, gosh, how do we get our people safely to work?
And what do you think about my comment on our ability to take on board risk?
Yes, I mean, I think generally people tend to be risk-averse and certainly don't like change on the whole. So I think anything around that, that's where the communication and the clarity has to be there. But yes, certainly we probably aren't as grateful as we should be for, you know, all the many sort of developments that have happened in society and technology and health that allows us to really have quite a lot of freedom. And of course, suddenly all that freedom, you know, can be taken away in one day. And yeah, then suddenly people start thinking about what they do actually have.
Well, it's interesting because I follow Dan Snow the history guy. He has a podcast, Dance Knows History Hits. And also I listened to a guy who runs the Irish History podcast in Ireland. And, you know, they both more recently have said that one of the reasons they love history is because it helps them to realize that we here in the West live, this is the best time to be alive, because for so long in human history, you know, nighttime has been an incredibly dangerous time because there's all sorts of beasties and nasties out there that want to eat you. And, you know, just the advances in medicine and stuff that we've had means that so much more can be done for us. And you can see, I was watching a program, Michael Burke's What the Victorians Did for Us, yesterday evening on TV. And he was talking about Liverpool and the difference that introducing a sewerage system in Liverpool had made in the 1800s. And at one point in Liverpool, the life expectancy was 15 years. 15 years. That meant that if that had carried on, bearing in mind that most 15-year-olds, you know, haven't started to reproduce, effectively, if you had a life expectancy of 15 years as a species, you'd die out pretty quickly. And that's how terrible it was. So just daily existence was so precarious. And we just don't have that anymore in the West. We don't even have to think about it. I watched a news report yesterday from India. They were talking about migrants in India leaving cities like Delhi and walking back to their villages, sometimes over 500 kilometers in the blazing sun, because the alternative was starvation. Now, here in the West, I know we have our social issues for sure, but, you know, the majority of people don't ever have to consider the choice between catching a disease or starving to death. And that's, like, that's incomprehensible. And so I think that's why there's been a lot of frustration and anger and anxiety around effectively the choices that we are now having to make. And it's starting with our educators. You know, we're asking them to take a risk by opening schools on the 1st of June. And I know there's all sorts of nuances involved in that, but when we have the conversations and the debates about it, we need to consider everybody's perspective. And there's no right and wrong here. You know, if a parent says, I'm afraid and I don't want to send my child back to school, we should support that point of view. If a teacher says, I am afraid and I don't want to be in a classroom of children, we should also support that point of view, because there's no right and wrong. It's not a yes, no answer here. And I think it's... the government have put forward their reasoning. And again, there's no right and wrong with that. They're absolutely valid in what they say about, you know, the importance of children's education, the importance of children's mental health, the importance of looking after children that are in vulnerable groups. Mm. And, you know, that's absolutely valid. But one doesn't discount the other. If a head teacher or a teacher or a local authority feel that they don't want to do it, then that should also be supported. And we're kind of, I know this isn't going to probably give a lot of people a lot of comfort, but we're going to just have to try and find the best path through it without the rights and wrongs. And, you know, there'll be plenty of time for that over the next few decades to examine in minute detail the decisions that have been made. But for now, you know, we have to fundamentally believe that people are making the decisions they're making with the very best of intentions. And we have to support that. And so what I would just say in terms of, so one of the other questions I'd sent out to you guys was, okay, so what can organizations and what can we as managers and leaders do to support people through these decisions and these anxieties? Well, first of all, for me, I think there can't be any punitive punishments for people for the decisions that they make. You know, if an organization is looking to remobilize their office and that there are people who are incredibly anxious about returning to a large office environment or even a small office environment, then they, you know, they shouldn't be punished for that. We have to step beyond the command and control, and we have to really, at this point more than ever before, we've got to build those relationships with our employees to be able to have those conversations. I would also say to organizations who are trying to read all the guidance and interpret it and digest it and understand what that means for them, you know, don't be afraid to not have all the answers. Don't be afraid to consult with your people, because at the end of the day, you know, if you can have put all of the amazing measures in place in your workplace, bring people back. But if people don't feel safe, and we've talked about psychological safety before on the podcast, if people don't feel psychologically safe, they're absolutely not going to be there at their best. And the most pragmatic view might be that although they might be not be as effective working remotely, they will be less effective if they're sat back in the office anxious. And I think organizations and managers, line managers, we need to really, really consider that, because that will have long-term effects on our people and on our businesses for years and decades to come.
I think I've spoken to quite a lot of people that are used to commuting, and they've been working at home and it's been absolutely fine. And they're now at the point where they feel actually they're far more productive working from home than they can be sometimes, because they're saving 4 hours a day in travel time because they're not commuting, and actually the work they do, they're able to do from home, and they've been managing with online meetings, which has kept everybody up to date.
And can I just say, Lisa, on that as well, like as a commuter, it is incredibly exhausting and stressful. Now, stress is relative. You know, I'm sure there's, you know, NHS doctors and nurses out there going, I'll show you what stressful is, for sure. All I'm saying is that in context, it's quite a stressful thing to do, and it's even going to be more stressful now and probably more expensive going forward, and we need to actively discourage it where it's reasonably practicable to do so.
Yeah, and I think it's going to change the face of for a lot of businesses about how they look moving forward, because you're even going to have this delay where schools and that don't return to normal for quite some time that people have got to manage. And actually those, yeah, those long-term ones where people are saying, like, I don't want to live like that anymore. So even one conversation I had this week, he said, he admitted he's been working at home, all of his business, a lot of his work is online anyway. And he said, our company, they are usually based in London. He said, but we've already got more staff in the company than there is that can be fitted into that building, because a lot of them work from home or remotely and whatever, or they're traveling about. He said, so with the capacity for half the number, there's no way we're going to fit everyone back in to go back to work. So they're going to have to find alternatives. He feels for the first time that he's got that kind of work-life balance right, because he's not having to do the commute. So he's been able to work at different times, but it's allowing him to still work. He's getting better quality family time because he can choose as and when that's happening during the day. He's not exhausted from the commuting at the end of the week. So weekends have been much nicer. Like, he's not having to recover from the commuting. And he said he hadn't really realised what impact that life had had on him at home and personally. So, yeah, he's really keen, and he's actually put an application into his employer for a flexi working system, which is a policy he said he's luckily that his company have already got, but they're going to have to roll that out far and wide because they can't actually fit them all back into the building that they existed in before. So, and I think there's going to be lots like that. Just trying to do social distancing in a workplace is going to really hit companies hard. So. But
for some people, it's going to be absolutely impossible. So again, I'd say I come from the construction industry, and one of the projects I'm currently managing is a project that's out in the east side of London, stretches out into Essex. And we've got a relatively small site team. So in addition to the social distancing measures that we've put in place on site for our day-to-day operating procedures, and that's everything from how we do briefings to how we actually undertake tasks. So that has changed. We've also, you know, been very fortunate in that a lot of people, it wouldn't have been practical for them to travel by public transport anyway. So they're able to use their own vehicles, and there's sufficient parking, and et cetera, et cetera. I have colleagues who work in construction in central London. Some of them who are currently, for example, working on Crossrail at stations like Tottenham Court Road and Bond Street and places like that. Now, apart from the practical measures that they need to put in place to get that back up and running in terms of how they manage the on-site activities, bearing in mind that some of their work sites are like 9 levels below ground with one way in, one way out. You can imagine going into an underground station, you know, down the staircases and escalators. So you can imagine the environment. But not only that, they then have to, all of those people that come back to work, if we're trying to encourage them not to use public transport, they all need to park. They all need to drive in the first place. They need to now pay the congestion charge, which is going to increase and is going to be 7 days a week and reinstated and everything. You're kind of, the work environment thing you can manage. It's all of the other stuff that's entirely, and I think this is the thing that, you know, people have been so incredulous about because we're so used to governments telling us exactly what to do. And I think part of the frustration was that the message came out from the Prime Minister, you know, we want you to go back to work, but we don't want you to use public transport. And I think it was, might have been Dominic Raab during the week, said that people have a civic duty not to use public transport. That's really unhelpful when actually what you're saying to people is, look, we need you to take the risk here. That's effectively what they're asking. And I think people would be much more appreciative of a little bit of honesty there from our legislature to say, look, you know, we appreciate that there are going to be risks here that we're asking you to take, and we need you to consider those and make your own decisions from there. And we will support you, whatever your decision might be. But to come out and say things like it's your civic duty not to use public transport, where certainly in the southeast of England and the greater London conurbation, we've spent the last few decades demotorizing and disincentivizing people from using other modes of transport, such as driving, to get them onto public transport. And London, for years, like one of the biggest concerns London has had is that the transport system is such a focal point for terrorist attacks, because people know that if they can bring the public transport system to a halt, they can effectively stop the city. You can't suddenly undo that overnight by saying, we advise you not to use public transport. And I've got friends and loved ones who currently are having to use public transport to commute into London, you know, mainline trains and the underground. And they're afraid. And I'm afraid for them. And it's very difficult conversations. I'm very lucky. I can sit here in my office and go, well, I'm glad I don't have to commute at the moment. But there are many people out there who can. And we can't underestimate the psychological effect that asking people to make that choice and take that risk is going to have. And I think as managers and employers, our single biggest obligation is just to understand what we're asking our people to do.
Yeah. And I think that's where people's feelings have come from this week, because you've got some, they're being asked to go and get on a train to London, as an example, and spend time in an environment with people that they don't know, that they don't know what they've been doing, yet they can't go and spend an hour in their mum and dad's house with their grandchildren where they know exactly what they've been up to during lockdown, because they've probably not been anywhere, and that probably feels safer to them to go and spend a day in their house than it is to jump on a train and spend time with people they don't know. Yeah. And I've even had friends feel like that, even with the supermarket trips. It's, you're suddenly out in an environment where you do everything you can to protect yourself, but you're still relying on everyone else doing the same for themselves so that you still feel safe. And weirdly, a supermarket visit for some friends of mine has been the worst experience throughout all of this. And I think it is very similar. I think, yeah, and I think that's where I think this week's not felt totally clear, because, yeah, people are sort of starting to compare it to other situations and then feel, well, if I'm allowed to do that, then I should be allowed to do that. And I think that's where the confusion is. And I think as well, the other thing on Sunday was suddenly talking about tomorrow. It didn't give businesses any real chance to take in what was being said and working that out. And then all the media was on about, so people, what are they going to do tomorrow morning? And there's going to be a flood of cars on the road and the rest of it. And it was kind of like, it really didn't help the businesses being able to ramp up. And I think that needed to be another stage this week almost, was make those announcements last week, but having given this last week for all of that information to come out, for to give businesses a chance to work it out. Because before that, we were expecting to possibly be in another 3 weeks lockdown. So I think actually government in that way have put a load of pressure on business owners, because their staff this week have then wanted answers and to know what's expected of them. And yet it's because I'll admit it, I listened to it Sunday, and I plan to send an email out to all the tenants at the workshop on Monday. I didn't actually get that email out to them on Wednesday, until Wednesday, because it took me those 2 days to kind of find the extra advice and put together our plan.
Yeah.
Before I could give them any answers.
And it's fine for large organizations who have big machines of experts, like in the organization, who can, you know, review and digest such information and then turn it round into what that means practically. But for the large majority of our organizations, certainly in the UK, who don't have that sort of back office machine there to understand all that, you know, you're asking individuals who may not be natural sort of business people anyway, they, you know, they're just following their passion, to digest and understand and implement some quite complex guidance.
Yeah, and even because it is a health and safety thing. And my experience working for myself the last 6 years was, it was predominantly with smaller business people, and health and safety and stuff was something they wouldn't necessarily, they didn't deem as being important all the time. Some were very good, but majority weren't. They didn't see that, because they were a small business, that it mattered to them as much, but it matters to everybody. And I think anyone that's got even a basic understanding of that, this has probably come a little bit easier. But for those that have always dismissed that and never really bothered to do it, it's massive. And that's pressure on, they're going to have to do it now, because I think, it's really going to have an impact, and staff will be expecting it of their bosses to be directing them. But without the direction themselves, it's and even the same for customers. There is going to be, especially where you look at hairdressing salons and beauty places, I think customers are going to be looking for that direction from the owners as well, and the managers, to be able to turn up, either probably to be told before. So one of the things I'm got implementing this week is a notice that I'm sending out to all our tenants that they have got to send out to any visitors that they're going to have to come into the building before they even get there. So it clearly outlines what we expect of them as a visitor. And we're actually putting a real limit on that in June, or throughout June anyway, just to see how things go. But it's all of that. And I think there's a lot of things people having to do to step up and put in place. So I think any employee, customer, anything, they're constantly going to be looking for guidance from whoever it is they're dealing with.
Yeah, and like for me, like coming again from my background, I mean, I'm not an expert at anything, but I'm a fully qualified human being and I've got a birth certificate to prove it. like I heard this morning on the news that they were saying that like suppliers of plexiglass screens and stuff now are really struggling because there's a shortage of materials.
Yeah.
And I was minded to think that, as with all these things, you know, you can put in all of the command and control, the physical, practical measures and guidance and everything else. But actually, probably 90% of the challenge here is going to be around behaviors, because, you know, we're so much driven by behavior that we're going to have to continually like relearn or unlearn all of those old behaviors and relearn new ones. And actually, that's where we really need to put the effort, is into the behavioral side of, you know, just constantly stopping to think. We spend so much of our life almost on autopilot, where we just do stuff because we've always done it. My background is, and sort of very, you know, relatively recently in construction, we've started to talk about, you know, the 30-second stop and think initiative, and, you know, all these sorts of things to go, you know, we constantly have to be thinking, am I safe? Am I safe? Is what I'm doing safe? And to get people who just have, you sort of manage their daily lives automatically around their office environment, to suddenly think about every individual step that they take. I mean, I have an employee, Bella. I have no intention of bringing her back at the moment, because she doesn't need to be in the office. But number two, I can't absolutely guarantee her safety. And again, you know, as an employer, I have to assess the risk, the employee liability that I hold as a responsibility, and what that means as well. And I think that's something that maybe the government didn't really do enough to sort of talk about, in terms of, like, you know, we can give you all the guidance, but at the end of the day, as an employer, legally, you hold the responsibility.
Yeah.
And you hold the liability. And that's, I think that's one of the biggest challenges. And so then around the whole communication piece, I think part of the thing is that the government has tried to, for quite obvious reasons, control the message. And so the daily briefings, and it's very soundbitey, and they're trying to give as much information as they reasonably can, but in a very controlled way. I think in these sorts of scenarios, you can't communicate enough, and everything should be open for discussion. And again, it shouldn't be about blame or finger pointing. It should be about open and reasonable debate and conversation, and appreciating other people's point of view. And so I would ask, and this one may be quite unfairly, but hey, I'm going to throw him to the wolves, Gary Spinks, as our resident media expert, do you think that the media need to take a little bit more responsibility around the messaging and the, you know, the jumping the gun element of, oh, you know, this is potentially what's going to happen? Also then the criticism, because one of the things I've been quite disappointed with, it's been better recently in the daily press briefings, where they've started to actually get members of the public asking questions. But up to now, our representatives have been journalists, and I've been very disappointed with their lack of imagination around some of the questions they've been asking. Can I have your opinion, please, Mr. Spinks?
Yeah, and just to touch on what you're saying about the messaging. So I think from the government itself, I think there's been some mixed messages and a lack of clarity in places, which hasn't helped. And I think that as a government, they do actually want people to just do what we say, and we don't really want you to be discussing it and challenging us over it. So from my journalistic hat on, I think, I have already been critical of much of the coverage, and some of the questioning has been questionable, but I do think there is a fundamental right to challenge the government and to you know, keep it held to account. You know, as I don't think that overall, you know, the media have covered themselves in glory with that. And of course, you're going to get certain papers who are always going to follow a certain line anyway and just take it to, you know, kind of very kind of what we call, I don't know, sort of sewer levels, really, with some of the headlines and the, you know, attacks on certain professions or people. But there has to be that account of accountability. And it's even more important at these times where really there's only kind of one topic on people's minds. You know, that's the time when other things can slip through as well. So, you know, I'm partially worried about some of the other things that are going on in the background that maybe we're not hearing about and they're getting missed. So I think it's important that the journalists keep their eye on that.
And, so it's a good time to bury bad news, are you suggesting?
Yes, but also it's when, you know, they might be able to push through, you know, legislation or rules which allow them to, you know, take measures which we might not necessarily agree with, but we have another chance to, you know, fully, you know, take it through Parliament or even have a discussion.
You mean, you know, in terms of like civil liberties and stuff?
It could be that, or it also could be around the, you know, potential vaccines. You know, there's amongst all this, and whilst there are, you know, the laws and legislation, so also there are obviously people are, you know, making up their own minds about, you know what am I agreeing with and what's my interpretation of, you know, driving for exercise, for example, or you know, so I think that, you know, it's you know, it's a tricky one, because, and as you say, it's down to sort of but that behavior, and you know, that will be what determines what happens. I mean, even just going to the supermarket, I think we mentioned that the local Tesco, I think, have done a pretty good job at trying to set the store out. But even if you show people this is the direction arrow for this aisle and then the other one is going the other way, there are still people who just choose to ignore that and just go down any aisle they fancy. But you know, but people are dealing with this in the best way they can, so you know, you can understand it if they just want to get in and get out of a supermarket where they're perhaps a bit fearful, and you know, perhaps their mind is not being about fully aware of everybody else.
But I think that will change over time, because sort of touching back on what I was saying earlier about the whole, you know, absence of risk in our lives generally, you know, people are being asked to consider things that they would never have had to consider before. And people will progress along that spectrum at different rates of speed. And so one of the things we can't do is, you know, chastise people unnecessarily. We have to be more supportive of each other as well. As I was saying to you earlier, there was some unsavory scenes in a local supermarket yesterday. And a lot of that is driven by fear and anxiety and frustration. And we have to understand that too. Now more so than ever, we have to be more understanding of each other. And yeah, just to come back to what you were saying about sort of the media, absolutely, there is no one on the planet, I hope, more of an advocate than I am for holding people to account. And I think that's absolutely vital, and to scrutinize and to support, to disseminate that information to the people. I think what they do need to rein back in on a little bit is the speculation and prophesizing element of it, because I think that's quite unhelpful, but it probably sells newspapers. There's a lot of responsible journalism out there, but I think there's an awful lot of irresponsible journalism as well. And that's not just professional journalists, that's keyboard warriors and everything else as well. So, you know, I do think we just need to be more understanding and caring and responsible.
Yeah, I also think there's, again, it's all about balance and context as well. And that's another area where, you know, whilst, you know, yes, there is a virus and yes, it's killed people, you know, when we balance everything against other things, I think that's sometimes where the sort of context is largely missing in the overall picture of things. So, and that's probably where I feel that, you know, if people are able to have a bit more freedom, but keeping that social distancing. So I think, for example, I think as Lisa alluded to earlier, visiting mum and dad, but you actually can only visit one and you kind of talk to them and then that's it. Or what do you do then? Go away, come back and talk to the other parent. I mean, I think things like that are a little bit ludicrous, really. I think if you've got a situation where people have been, and I know people, they haven't gone out at all, not at all in the last 7-8 weeks, that's not good for their health. But that clearly means that they won't have the virus. So somebody should be able to, son or daughter should be able to visit them and see them in the garden, socially distanced, both at the same time. Just seems to me, can't see the logic there. And also we're allowing nannies to go back into homes. Estate agents can go and do valuation of homes, but we're not letting the mental health teams carry out assessments in homes of people who actually need, really big support right now. Mm. So I just think, so for me, it's, mixed messages. It's like, you're saying that the health of the nation is important, and yet, a lot of things are coming home to roost in terms of, lack of resources and where decisions have been made, long ways back and in the more recent past. We're now seeing also that plays a part in it as well. So in future thinking, hopefully that will be reflected in how decisions are made by leaders.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that on the SAGE group, the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies, that are advising the government, that it's reasonably weighted, not just to physicians, but to, psychologists and mental health practitioners as well. And I'd like to see the government take more support in terms of their messaging from the psychology fraternity, in terms of how they give out the message. Because I agree with you, Gary, that the more some of the things seem to be very ludicrous. And I think as soon as you have things where it sort of lacks credibility, the ludocracy of it, I don't even know if that's a word, but it'll do for now.
We'll use it.
Yeah, ludocracy, coefficient of the message. So if, that devalues the message and its power in some way, if people are looking at it and going, well, this is clearly ludicrous, this is ridiculous, that I can do that, but I can't do that, that they need to be very careful with that in terms of the psyche of the nation, because you can very easily lose the legitimacy of the message you're trying to give if it seems to people and can be proven to people to be a little bit ludicrous, because people will pick out what they want from it. If somebody decides that, oh, that's completely ridiculous, then they're more likely to think that everything else that you say is also ridiculous, and potentially that can cause a problem.
Yeah, and I say, we've already had people expressing their views in Hyde Park and other places, and we don't have to sort of talk about the pluses and minuses of that, but clearly there are people have their own story, their view, their perception of what's going on, and people will behave accordingly and they'll react accordingly. So not saying this is an easy thing to deal with at all, but I think it does require real clarity, not just from government, but also the businesses. So again, in terms of what they should be doing, I mean, they should already have been sort of reviewing and assessing the announcement and the implications of that and the documentations, preparing their sort of workspaces for whatever they're going to create as their new way of working. And I think the blended working, part home, part office, and the remote working is going to be an increasing feature of the way we work. I mean, that was already happening. That trend was already there. It's just going mm-hmm. to be accelerated now. And probably as Lisa said earlier, you know, there'll be people who've perhaps had that experience for the first time of working from home and actually thinking, I like this. I can, I don't have to do the 9 to 5. If I want to do something earlier in the morning or later at night, as long as the work's getting done, the company should be happy. But also it gives them the flexibility and they can enjoy that family time as well.
Makes for a happier employee, and happier employees are more productive employees. The science is undeniable.
Yeah. Well, potentially, yeah. For some people, it may be just the thing that works better for them. And organizations are going to, have to look at that. And also for some of them, it may be that they think, well, actually, that's a good thing. It means we can downsize from huge, massive offices to smaller office space. So I think there's going to be quite a interesting, you know, I guess if the estate agents can go out, there'll be lots of office people going out and checking office space and saying, oh, great, we can, because more of our people are working remotely or from home, we can have a smaller space. So we don't have to pay the rents. So that what they're paying in rents, the saving in rent can be put towards the management of the remote workers.
That's going to be frightening for people who are in real estate, but how endeavor. Can I just put something to you both and to the wider listenership? And it kind of harks back to an interview I did some months ago with Patrick Tomlinson. There's a part one and a part two, and if you haven't listened to it, I encourage you to go back and listen to it. But as part of that, one of the things Patrick was talking about was the defense mechanism, the defense method of measuring stress resilience within employees. And it had originally started as a way of looking at fighter pilots. And what they had found that under certain stressful conditions, fighter pilots were either seeing threats that weren't there or were not seeing clear and present threats because of their levels of stress. Because when the body, and particularly the brain, is under stress, it goes into a heightened state of consciousness whereby it's really operating at above its optimum level, and it's kind of having to make some stuff up and make leaps of faith and decision making, and that's why sometimes in the cold light of day with 2020 hindsight, when we look back at things and we do root cause analysis, we go, why did that person make that decision? I mean, it was clearly a ridiculous decision to make, but you're looking at things in the cold light of day with 2020 hindsight. You need to try and look at it from the perspective of the decision-making process that was going on in that person's mind at that time. And the reason I'm talking about this is because there's been a lot on social media about how certain people are reacting to this, that you have people who are in complete denial versus people who are absolutely in morbid fear and everything in between, massive spectrum. And, you know, this it's hard to understand how people can be totally in denial. You know, the evidence is there, et cetera, et cetera. And some of the behaviors that we've seen in society, the arguing and everything else that goes on in supermarkets, everything else. You kind of also have to understand it as a coping mechanism for some people. And you know, maybe the chickens are coming home to roost here a little bit, because we've not placed enough emphasis on psychological and mental health well-being for generations now. We have people out there, we're all potentially vulnerable to it to varying or lesser degrees. But there are people out there who are acting in uncharacteristic ways. And so to castigate them or chastise them is not the way to manage it. To condescend them, or, you know, in other ways to disparage them, also doesn't help. We really need to try and understand, because the only way we're going to really, truly, effectively get through this is to be more empathetic, more understanding, and more caring of each other's perspectives, experiences, and points of view. And so I would encourage people to go back and listen to that, to the interview with Patrick Tomlinson, parts one and two, because he had some very interesting things to say around that and around the psychological safety factor of how we feel psychologically safe in the workplace. So please go back and listen to that if you have time. I just wanted to put that in there because I think it's very pertinent to some of the things we're talking about at the moment. So in terms of then, Lisa, for you, I guess it's going to be some very interesting couple of weeks coming up.
Yeah. And it's been good to kind of talk this through because it's even raised a couple of bits I need to look at this week.
Can you share?
Yeah, well, I think there's so much to listen to and read through. So I've tried to just stick purely to government advice all the way through because that's kind of my backup and support to be able to justify the decisions we've made as a workshop to our customers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I've kind of spent the last week looking at is there. So I haven't read one piece of media in the last 8 weeks at all. So
lucky you.
Well, you're feeling so jolly.
Yeah, it's kept me going. So I've listened to the daily briefing, but I got to the point to start with of not listening to the media questions because they were doing my head in. But I would listen to the briefing and kind of take from that because that kind of kept check on what was going on and, yeah, what we had to be aware of. And that's been all I've really used other than then the last few weeks talking to sort of peers of mine, so people that are doing similar jobs to me, managing other workspaces. So the workspaces can be very different, but the concerns are the same for all of us. So it's really been about tapping into those people that are really going to make a difference to my job as well and getting advice from places that are really going to matter. Yeah, so I haven't really read any media because I think you can end up reading too much. And for me, that's probably a psychological thing about myself that I've learned is, yeah, you sort of take on too much stuff. Mm-hmm. And actually just dealing with tenants and stuff, that's where my time for me has been really well spent, is talking to people locally that I have contacts with about how it's affecting businesses in the immediate area, but also to our tenants. So keeping check with them on how things are going for them, what's affecting them, to get to this point where I can now plan A, to help them get back into their workspaces properly, support them in getting their staff back safely, and then, yeah, the long term of what else can we be doing. So although at the moment we know it's really changing stuff, for me now it is about helping people get back. So we've got everything going on from preparing the workplace and the communal areas. It's helping those employers that need it about how to assess their office space to get staff back. Although the feedback I've had so far is that I think initially it's just going to be the owners that are coming back in to utilise the workspace, because some of them have continued to be really busy. Others, it's really changed what their business looks like. So they almost feel like they're going back to the beginning. So it's almost like helping them to start generating new business and getting business back up and running so that they're in a position to need their staff back. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where government's been great. All the time they can be supported with a furlough scheme that allows work to start happening again. Staff are, yeah, if they're on furlough, it's been a really big support because it's giving owners a chance to get their businesses back up and running properly before having to pay out.
And having to deal with the psychological stress of redundancies and stuff, to know that they've been able to furlough their staff, to be able to keep that relationship, but also it's just one more stress not to have to deal with.
And I think, unfortunately, there will be some redundancies for some people because I don't think some businesses are going to recover or not quick enough. So unless government see that there's, I know the loans and stuff have been really helpful for a lot of people, and that should kind of be a year's worth of support for them. We know that not all the funding has been relevant for everybody. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely going to be losing a section of people and businesses. So I think it's going to really change. And I suppose for me at the workshop, it's, yeah, kind of looking about how we then support those people through that. But weirdly as well, I've had quite a few inquiries the last couple of weeks. And I think a lot of that, especially in the last bit, I think there's a lot that see that they're not going to be commuting for some time. So they're looking for desk space.
So that they can escape their children and spouses.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I literally had a call 2 weeks ago from one tenant and he was like, when can I come back? And I was like, oh, not really yet. But yeah, there's some that are desperate to get back. Like working from home just hasn't suited them.
Yeah.
However, but again, some of it is just the psychological. They want to be with other people that get where they're coming from. So I think some people have gone home working, but because whoever's at home isn't used to them working from home, that's put pressure on as well. And that's put pressure on relationships and all sorts. There's a lot of people that have managed to get on and they've made it work because they've had to. So yeah, I think for us, the psychological stuff is going to be very much more with the business owners. And then it's about helping. It's being able to work out what can we put in place overall as somewhere like the workshop that can help everybody.
And I think, you know, not to be too grandiose about it, but I think we all, and I mean this very much the global we, you know, you, Gary, myself, Sophie, our listeners, we all have a responsibility to support each other.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, I would put it out there that, like, my experience of heavily regulated, quite risky day-to-day operations, you know, if I can be of help to anybody, they only have to either pick up the phone or drop me an email, and where time allows, I will give them any support that I reasonably can.
Yeah. I mean, I think my job role as manager is going to be very different for the next 6 months. Yeah, I'm going to be...
Well, you're going to become mother psychologist, you know, friend, you know.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It is about being able to say to someone, like noticing that things might be a bit of a struggle and saying to it, let's just go up on the terrace for a coffee at whatever time. And all of that stuff's doable. And I think that's going to be a lot of my job is going to be doing that. And whether it's taking a member of staff out of a situation from an office and encouraging them out of their space a little bit more. Whether it's the business owners, it could be anything, but I think my role is going to look very different, I think, for the next six, possibly even up to sort of the next 12 months.
And probably a timely opportunity just to say to people, you know, who are out there and are our employees, just to consider that, you know, their employers, their bosses, their managers, their leaders, their managing directors are humans too.
Yeah.
Going through exactly the same anxieties, stresses, and everything else that they are. And we're all just humans at the end of the day, going to try and do the best we can to support each other to get through this thing.
Yeah, and I think for talking on the risk elements, sort of managing that, I think this has made a lot of people realise that they haven't ever really considered risks and crisis management and that sort of stuff. So I think that's going to play a big part moving forward as well, is trying to help people make sure that they perhaps have got plans in place so that if this sort of thing ever comes up again. And I think even for us as the workshop, there was no plan 8 weeks ago if we needed to shut the building down at all. So we've had to come up with that plan, or I have in the last 8 weeks, and it's even now it's not quite there because we haven't had to get to that point. And I think originally you do all the health and safety risk assessments, you have all that done, you know what would happen if there was a fire. This has been so different to any of those big risks that people normally think about, because it's very been in limbo. And
there's no one size fits all solution to it all. It's very much bespoke and horses for courses as well.
Yeah.
But I'd encourage people, like, because sometimes we get into a situation where we can't see the wood for the trees and we say, oh, we've got to risk assess all this, but we're constantly thinking of the output and how are we going to get to that? Because that's a lot of, you know, documentation and everything. Everything starts with a conversation. And I can absolutely guarantee you from my experience of having 28 years of constantly assessing. So as a project manager, I'm deploying people to work and I'm effectively putting them at risk, albeit very, very low risk and mitigated risk, but risk nonetheless. And that constantly weighs heavily on your mind. So you're just used to constantly having those conversations. And it's very much a behavior thing. It's one of the things I'm most very proud of in construction, albeit, you know, we still have way too many accidents, but we're very, very good at sharing concern about health and safety risk. And, you know, it all starts with conversations. So as if an organization is out there and they're listening and they're thinking, oh, I don't even know where to start with a conversation. Get all that get all those thoughts out there, verbalize them, because we again, as human beings, we're all very good at, once we've started to verbalize things, we start to create solutions for them, albeit subconsciously.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people sort of dismiss the be alert message from last weekend, but actually that is what I'm going to have to ask tenants to do coming back.
That's a behaviours thing.
Yeah. And I've said to them, I don't want to teach them to suck eggs. We're all adults. We've all lived through the last 7-8 weeks. We've all seen the messages that have gone out. We've all had to change how we shop, all the rest of it. None of that's going away. Mm. And actually, like you said earlier, it's now about helping each other to protect ourselves and the employees in building, and also then where we go home to, and still about protecting that. So it's becoming a much bigger circle that we're all going to be trying to look after.
We're absolutely all in it together.
Yeah.
For the first time in a long time, that saying is more true than ever before.
Yeah, we are all in this together. The only thing that makes it easier on all of us psychologically is that we're all having to do something. We're all having to do something to change, to compromise. And yeah, we all just need to be understanding that everybody's situation is a little bit different. And then, like you say, regarding 4th of July, we'll wait and see what comes up.
Mm.
Yeah,
a lot will happen between now and the 1st of June. Who knows what will happen between now and the 4th of July?
Yeah. And to be honest, we've kept things at a very minimum level. We've still got restrictions in place to see what happens, so that if there was to be a second spike and government suddenly say, no, stop everything, go back to how it was, the situation is then much easier to manage.
Yeah.
Our end, to be able to kind of slow things down again. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the advice I've given to a lot of the employers as well, is sort of do the minimum for June and almost take that time to plan how they're going to get their workforce back. And I think it's the only good thing, like with furlough, if they're able to furlough until the end of June, then that's really beneficial.
So
it'll be interesting to see what extra numbers in the building does for us.
I would say to employers as well, like, be kind to your staff and understanding. You know, if you've got people who are parents and are particularly anxious about their children going back to school, you know, work with them, folks. Have the conversations. We're all grown-ups now, and appreciate that people are being asked to make decisions that with risks associated that they've never had to do before. So, you know, we are rich as a species because of our ability to work together in large social groups. And now it's more important than ever to be able to do that. And it will benefit us for the longer term, because we'll develop trust and empathy and understanding within our workforces as well. So we all need to consider that. How about for you, Gary? You know, what's it going to mean for you in the next couple of weeks? And what do you sort of, I know we said the media shouldn't really hypothesize too much, but what's your hypothesis on what the next 2 weeks will bring?
Well, for me personally, yes, I'm going to be looking at a new workspace, as I said. So that's So that's sort of it. So it goes against the general tide, which is, you know, stay at home if you can. But I think, again, when having to balance risk and health matters, for me, that's going to be important. But also, as I said, looking really, I'm sort of reviewing what I'm doing and what I'm offering, so, and you know, what resources I need for the coming sort of weeks and months ahead. And I say, in terms of working with clients, it's very much business as usual, because it's all largely been done on the phone and internet via Zoom and Skype and so on. So no change there for me. I mean, I do think the more people working at home approach does mean that, again, another issue will be the availability of high quality broadband and internet for people, and also things like internet security for people who are remote working from home. And I also think that, you know, we'll probably see companies offering or being encouraged to offer things like counselling and psychology and therapist services to their employees should they need it, because it is, I think, for some people at that level where they do probably either need or would welcome some, you know, professional support to help them get through the next few weeks and months.
Absolutely. And sorry, just to, you know, I don't think that point can be overemphasized enough, that, you know, we now have a much greater responsibility in terms of looking after the psychological health of our employees, because the success of our businesses depends upon it in reality, and the success of our economy and our society depends upon it. And now more so than ever, it's vital that we do that. And again, like, don't feel that we have to have all the answers. There's help out there. Seek guidance, talk to people about strategies, you know, be prepared to be vulnerable as an organization, in terms of that you don't know exactly what to do in every circumstance, but you're going to work with your people to find the best way forward. I can't stress so much how that will stand you in such good stead in the longer term. So, Gary, for you, obviously, largely going to be business as usual. Have you had any particular sort of feedback from any of your clients about, you know, how they feel about what's going to happen over the next two or so weeks?
I think it's a mixture. I think sort of for many, it's not been too bad for them, I think. And it's and for some, because of the nature of their business, it's either been an online business or largely online business. So for them, actually, there's been more opportunities. So it's been working with them around that. So, but I think, yeah, I think people have enjoyed having a bit of communication. So the fact that I've been in touch with them, it's just kind of checking in. They've appreciated that. And I've had some good conversations with people. I had I'm doing, as part of a project, I'm doing some short free consultations with people, and one the other day was half an hour and it ended up being an hour and a half. And, you know, I just kept saying, look, it's absolutely okay, I'm happy to do the extra time, because we just got into something that just really, you know, I wanted to get into with them. And I just thought, if I can give them something that allows them to move forward with extra confidence, it's worth putting that extra effort in for them.
Mm. Thank you both. My final, well, I have two things to say to our listeners. Number one, these are unprecedented times, as I'm sure one or two people have mentioned over the last couple of weeks on the TV and stuff. But you know, it's true. And there's no blueprint for this thing. And we're just going to have to try and muddle through and find the best and least risky way of proceeding. But proceed we will, and proceed we must. But I would say to individuals, it's okay to be anxious, to be scared, to be uncertain, whether it's individuals or organizations. You know, as I said, there's no, we can't go and find a reference manual. There's no Haynes manual for this thing. There's loads of people out there going, what the hell is a Haynes manual? anyway, Google it. It's safe, by the way. You can Google it on a work laptop if you wish. You won't find anything naughty. But, you know, not to make light of it, but, you know, there isn't a guide per se on how to proceed with this. We will do the very best we can. And that's the reality. So I would encourage people to not, don't try and be too stoic about it. Don't try to deny your emotions around the whole thing. And one of the best and most powerful things you can do is share those feelings and emotions with people. And we'd love to hear people's stories, whether they're a business owner or a manager or an individual contributor or a worker, an employee. You know, how is your organization approaching it? How are you going to approach it? You know, if you're a parent, what are your concerns? If you have some, you know, share them all with us. You can email us at podcast@leadersandmanagershub.com. Or you can contact us through our Leaders and Managers Hub Facebook page if you so wish. And just one other message before I go to my, I embarked upon some debates on some social media platforms recently, and I seem to have gained, I wouldn't call them a fan. what I would say is that from my perspective, if you write in block capitals, that tells me you're shouting at me. Yeah. And therefore, that's no longer a debate. And to say that I lack academic legitimacy, they picked that up from a previous cast where I had shared that was one of my old vulnerabilities that I got rid of. That's no longer a vulnerability of mine anymore, sir. So you can throw that one at me if you wish. It doesn't hurt me no more. I'm cool. But I would say, you know, if you want to have a debate, let's have a debate. Shouting at me and calling me names is not a debate.
That's my job.
But yeah, absolutely. But I respect your right to have and share your opinion, and I would die to protect that right for you. But let's have a conversation in a reasonable way, my friend. He knows who he is, I'm sure. If he I know he listens to the podcast because some of the abuse has been with reference to the podcast. So he's out there. And just a note for people. So Gary nearly finished editing that wonderful interview that you did. And yes, that will be available. I'm looking at putting that out on the bank holiday Monday, the 25th. But I'll share that internally with the team before that goes. So you'll have the MP3 file to share with your interviewee. I've got an interview booked for tomorrow, Monday, with a couple of guys who they actually run the Three People in Your Head podcast. They are transactional analysis practitioners, which is a personal and professional passion of mine. And so that's going to be fantastic. We're recording that tomorrow, Monday, which will actually be, if this podcast comes out Monday morning, it will be this evening. That's a bit weird saying that. Get your head around that one. There'll be some interesting stuff there. We'll be talking to John and Matt about their journey into TA. And we'll be asking some pertinent questions related to the ongoing mental health and psychological challenges that we all face and how transactional analysis can support people through that. So look forward to that. I've got some training this week, by the way. I'm doing some training. I'm doing some learning. I've got my TA 101 online course on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at the Burn Institute. So it's sort of my step one on my formal route to qualification to become a TA practitioner. and my intention is to use it to support my organizational development practice, as opposed to sort of therapeutic practice. So that's going to be quite exciting. How about you guys? Anything other than what we've already talked about? Anything exciting coming up in the week?
I was just trying to think about what else I've got on this week, but no, I've been doing an HR course online for the last few weeks. That finishes this week.
Okay.
Just to give me something to do.
And so Sophie's listening to this now going, something to do? Some of it, it's our life's work, for crying out loud.
Well, this is it. And I've always had an interest, ever since I did my degree, I've always had an interest in HR and just everything people, I suppose. It's more about the people. Mm. And yeah, it's been one of these ones that's been a free course. So I thought, well, it's just given me something different to think about at home in the evenings and the weekends. It's not been too taxing at the level it's at, but it's just kind of given a broad scope. And I'm quite keen on leadership stuff, like, and it all being about being really practical for people.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been good. It's kind of just given me a different. Well,
you're kind of, I mean, I don't know you that well, Lisa, but from what I do know of you, you're very well suited to working with people, because you have a warmth and an empathy and an intelligence to be able to communicate well with people. And I think that comes across on the podcast as well.
Brilliant. So yeah, I've got to finish that this week. That's
okay.
One job.
And that, you say that was entirely online?
Yeah, it's all been online. It literally lasts about 5 weeks. But once you sign up for it, you can take as long as you want. But
yeah,
I've tried to keep to it weekly, because it's, again, it's given me that accountability, I think, to think, well, I've got to get it done. Otherwise, I might never have bothered, especially because I haven't had to pay for it. I think that's the limbo. But it's been good to have something else to think about and switch off from everything else that's going on, because I think coming home to my own company, I'm quite happy with, but I think you can then keep thinking about the job and it makes it hard to switch off from it.
Yes, when there it's hard to distract yourself.
Yeah, well, normally my son would be here and there'd be his stuff going on during the day, and or I'd be going to the gym and all that sort of stuff, and none of that's there. So it's given me a distraction from everything else for the last few weeks. So it's been good.
And it's always good to learn new things.
Yeah.
Keeps the grey matter exercised. How about you, Gary? Anything exciting coming up for the next week or so?
Again, on the training front, I'm doing some learning for myself with some online courses that I've already paid for a couple of years ago, but they keep adding new stuff to it. So I'm going to be having a look at those. But also I'm putting together my own little training package around Story for Business. So I'm busy preparing and writing some PDFs for the documentation for that. So that's going to keep me busy for 2-3 weeks. And also, just going to make sure I keep getting out for my walks so that I get my outdoor fix with or without cake, depending on.
Cake is optional.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pleased to say that our, the cafe that's here on site where I rent an office has been closed since the whole lockdown. And I believe they're planning to restart again next week with a takeaway service. So being sick of my homemade ham and mustard sandwiches, I cannot tell you how much I'm looking forward to that. It was such a wonderful thing with the supermarket shopping yesterday, not to be buying several loaves of bread and packs of ham and a jar of mustard, you know, being comfortable in the knowledge that I can actually have a little bit of variety in my lunches. Is, I just can't express to you what that means to me psychologically. I really can't.
It's the little things in life.
Oh, honestly.
It makes a big difference, because when I've been at the workshop, I've not been able to leave all day. And I was fine until the last couple of weeks. And now I'm like, I'm just really wanting a local coffee shop to open. So
yeah.
I've been walk up the road and get a takeaway coffee and, yeah, have a wander on the beach, which, to be fair, until there's certain people back at the workshop, I'm not going to be able to do anyway. But, yeah, that thought of being able to just go and, yeah, buy a coffee somewhere else that I haven't had to make myself.
Yeah.
Will be amazing. So, yeah, so I definitely can't wait for some of the local ones to open up again, and more for them as well. I think it's got to be really tough on some of them. And I just hope that they're all able to reopen. I think that's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about the challenges of offices and education establishments and stuff. I mean, bars and restaurants and, you know, cinemas and stuff like that are just going to be a whole different ballgame. And, you know, we need to consider that too, because, you know, cultural things and social things are so important to us and as a species. So yeah, it's going to be interesting times. Thank you both for joining us today.
Yeah, no, it's
been wonderful.
Great. Really good.
Pleasure as always.
And be safe, everybody. Be well, and we will catch you again soon. Good luck.
We don't want to fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion.